welcome to episode 116 of Jen and Millie, where a Gen Xer and a millennial share the strength-based perspective through which they view the world. We are your hosts, Allison and Tess. Good to see you, Tess, as always.
Yeah.
Some of you may have noticed we have new aesthetics. We have new music. We have a new font. We have a new image. Okay. That's all Tess, as I'm sure none of you are surprised by. But I thought as we kind of celebrate new,
yeah,
we might hearken back to the origin. I've been spending a lot of time with a lot of leaders all over the country, and I talk about you in every session that I lead about the value of having complementary partners. I think great leaders are really good at having complementary partners. And I talk about the podcast, or sometimes, unbeknownst to me, someone will come up to me and say, "Oh, yeah, I listen to Jen and Millie."
Ooh, that's scary.
It's, I think terrifying would be a better word. And I will say things like, "Why? Why do you listen?" And then I've had amazing people in my life say, "When I'm missing you, I listen."
Oh, oh my gosh.
And it's just like sitting down and having a conversation with you.
Yeah.
And so I've heard from people that we create kind of a sacred space of friendship, complementary partners. We talk about engagement. We talk about leadership. We talk about strengths. But we have trust and rapport with one another where years... Oh, hello,
I'm so
George.
Sorry. George is just, he's on, so I tried to get him to calm down before we started recording. So hi, everybody. That's George, my one-year-old pug, almost 1 year.
George is part of us now. Mm-hmm. I think this space seems to be a container, a safe container for sharing.
Yeah.
And what I love is in the green room, we usually go deep really quick.
Yeah.
To just get things going and chat about where we are in life. I also think it's a great watch out so that we don't do it live.
I know. I knew you were going to ask about what you were going to ask about in the green room. So I was like, okay, well, I'll just go real deep real quick. And then we got to reel it back because that is not stuff that I want to record.
And I have learned, again, great best practice for myself is to get my words out ahead of time. And then I'm less likely to A, jumble them, or B, blurt them if I can just get them out before I get to the microphone.
Oh,
but if you are a new listener here, sharing and blurting and saying things I probably shouldn't say is one of the things that the Jen part of Jen and Millie shows up with. If you are seasoned here, you will remember episodes in which, wow, we had some revelations that came alive here. Yeah. And in looking back, I have absolutely no regret because I am very grateful to share this space with you and learn from you, but also feel safe in sharing. And what happens is I forget that there are
other people
here.
Yeah.
So hello to the other people who are listening and welcome to a conversation.
You are seen. We do know that you're here. We just tend to forget it sometimes when we're looking at each other.
Yes. And so welcome. And I thought it would be fun for us to give our own takes, for you and I to each give our own versions of how this came to be. One of the favorite questions that I have and that I've learned from JC, who's one of our favorite leaders, is how did you get to today? It's a great question to ask people. And so I thought I would ask you first, Tess, how we got to today.
Okay.
And hear your iteration. And then you can ask me the same question. And I may have a different 1 in 33 million strengths view on it, or a different recollection, which yours is probably going to be sharper. Let's just say that now.
I don't know about that. I feel like here, if we were to really lean into strengths with your high communication, you're the storyteller.
Are you putting it back on me?
I want to put it back on you to share the story, and I can insert with color and context as needed. Okay. I feel like that's the best way to share the story.
So great leaders adapt. I'm writing this down. Great leaders adapt. Just as a reminder to myself in case I want to know what great leaders do, because it is not my forte. But great leaders adapt. And I also believe that great leaders receive feedback. And receiving feedback is really important to me in this season of my life. And so, yes, I will absolutely shift and adapt and receive the feedback and be
proud of you.
Be partnering with a complimentary partner. We're going to get to all of these topics, by the way. But okay. I am a storyteller. So, okay. When I think back to the origins of how we got to today, I see a young college-age student in striped blue and white overalls. Actually, I never saw you in those, but I had an image of that because you were
going way further back than I was. Okay.
Well, that was my image of you because that was one of the things that you told people that you did or that you do is you were a, it's a J-sker. It's
a J. No, Blue Crew member. You're so far off. It's a blue member of the Blue Crew.
What's a J-sker?
Is someone who both supports the Creighton Blue Jays and the Huskers.
Oh,
J-sker.
That makes so much sense.
You know that. Come on.
Well, no, I don't really. Because I'm not in the sport. So you were a blue person?
What's that? Blue Crew member.
Blue Crew.
Member blue of the crew. Blue Crew.
You were a Blue Crew member. And that, in my mind, surprised me because I was like, this gal does not seem like a cheerleader.
Okay,
not from
it's
the
not
connotation.
Not a cheerleading crew, though.
What would you describe them?
When I think cheerleaders, we think like...
How would you describe a Blue Crew?
The student section pep crew, which is very different than a group of cheerleaders.
So a cheerleader for the student section?
Pep, like starting chants. I'm gonna use the word cheerleader.
Keep going, keep going. Keep going.
I bleed the pep, I'm going on mute. Bleed the pep.
So, As she might have indicated, I thought, this doesn't really seem like this Professor Tess, who I've come to affectionately call you over the years. This does not seem like the Professor Tess image that she was portraying when I was imagining these blue and white overalls in the pep crew.
Blue
However,
crew. The Blue Crew.
The Blue Crew. So as I got to know you a little bit better, It was this sort of recognition of this is a really brilliant person. And great leaders and great teams surround themselves with people who think differently. But also, I think great leaders surround themselves with people who are smarter than they are. And I knew you had a lot to teach me. It was just like immediately I could envision this Professor Tess lab coat that you would then later wear for a presentation. I could see that. And we started to have some really meaningful conversations. We were stuck in a really small container, so you didn't have a lot of choice but to have conversations with me. And then you were so lit up about strengths. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was something that you were excited about in a completely different way. I study and geek out over engagement. I referred to myself recently in my, what's the name of my title? Engagement nerd.
Yeah.
I am... absolutely drawn to and interested in what makes people show up, not because they have to, but because they want to. Mm-hmm. And you were showing up in these strengths conversations because you wanted to, not because you had to. And that had a really, it stood out to me. And so the conversations continued and there were more of them. And then we decided you were going to be part of the strengths team. Mm-hmm. I love that we called ourselves the strengths team. There were
the two of us.
There were two of us, so we're doing a multitude of other jobs. Mm-hmm. Not just one job,
yeah.
But a multitude of other jobs.
Nonprofit life.
Right, but fast forward, it doesn't look like that anymore. People have one role, and I had at one time four. Mm-hmm. And you had, I believe, at one time at least four, mm-hmm. including the not named tech support. And the not named Oppie machine expert. You had a lot of roles. So looking back, when we started to work together around strengths, we started spending time and it was in that travel time and in that drive time, in what we call the windshield time, that you and I started to have these really deep, meaningful conversations where we were talking about strengths. We were talking about the different lens in which we saw the world, of course, but we also were talking about the differences in the way that we grew up because of generational differences, also regional, I would say regional differences. You know, I'd never heard of Fleet Farm until you. So there were a lot of things that we started noticing were very, very different about the two of us. Yet when we would come together in the very enclosed windshield space, we'd have these dynamic dialogues that led to higher levels of engagement. Yeah. And we would get to the community and meet and be almost better at our jobs because we had had these engaging dialogues on the way and on the way back. And then we started bringing those back to the office, and our friend Hannah and our colleague Hannah started noticing. And I don't remember, this is where I'm going to lean in on your context, whose idea it actually was. Ooh. Hannah's?
Honestly, I think, wasn't it Bob's? I mean, I know he gave the name of it. He gave us the name, Jen and Millie, but I also think he was the one, like, you guys should make a podcast, or you guys should record these or something like that.
Maybe he was.
And maybe I don't want to, maybe that's giving him too much credit, but.
Hey, I'll give for Bob sure all credit. The credit.
We love you, have a Bob credit, but I for sure credit for the name. But I think it was one of those things. It was a program coordinator in a community that was like, because we would like continue these conversations after the windshield, right? Like we'd continue having them, like when we were setting up for strength sessions, when we were, you know, and we had such good conversations with program coordinators that they were like, they walked away more engaged from like having these like deeper conversations, intentional conversations around strengths that went beyond like the formal curriculum that we were bringing to them in their community. And I don't know how it happened. We brought it to Hannah and yeah, it then became a vlog back in the day and evolved into a podcast when Hannah went on maternity leave. And I was like, I don't have the video editing skills for that, but I think I can figure out how to record our voices. And that's how it led to a podcast. Now I know what an RSS feed is, and how to manage a podcast. But, yeah, I can't remember exactly whose idea it was, but I think
we had a lot of encouragement.
Yeah.
We had a lot of encouragement. And then we put ourselves in another small container to do the videos, which are epic. And people should, maybe that could be the Insta post is one of those images. Because at one time we had similar haircuts.
There's some great evolution of our hair and our outfits from.
It's just amazing.
Whenever
amazing.
This started.
And then when we moved to the podcast space, we then had to deal with the fact that then you were moving and you were headed to DC. And so one of the recordings, if you hearken back, is us in the car, me taking you to the airport. And, you know,
horrible,
I think of
audio, but beautiful,
but
conversation.
Such a significant, significant moment for me to think about, that's something I love to do, right, is to drop people off and pick people up at the airport. But it was part of such a meaningful transition in your life, and something that I wanted to – I am truly a cheerleader, and I'll own it. Yeah. I wanted to cheer you on about.
Yeah.
And then I moved to Denver, and we just have made this work across the miles. And I think – so I've had a couple suggestions in the suggestion inbox. And one of them was that maybe we should return to the video option, because most podcasts now have the ability for you to see. I mean, I'm not saying that we're as good as Glennon and Abby and Sister, but you see them while they're talking. And I think that's an interesting piece of feedback. Not sure how I feel, but I would definitely look a lot better when I would show up for those if we're going to be doing that. But we have listeners. And it stuns me, as I mentioned earlier, it just stuns me that people tune in, but I thought it would be really helpful for us to think about how we got to today. Mm-hmm. Because there are a couple things within that we had talked about last episode in my work now, and I just want to publicly thank the universe that in my work now, I am wildly busy and having a hard time keeping up and traveling all over the place. So I think maybe I had two options for this recording. April, I might have one. I'm gone.
We're gonna lock that down.
I'm gone most of the time. I have been in Montana, and I've been in New York, and I'm headed to California, and I'll be in Charlotte, and just a lot of work with great teams. And I'm working with amazing, amazing teams and amazing leaders. Mm-hmm. And so I've started to pay attention to this sort of best practice model of what great leaders do. Now, I know there's a ton of books and there's a ton of research and there are a ton of experts on that, but I've just started to kind of jot down what I notice and what I see as real. Great leaders do these things, and they're not just talking it, they're doing it. Yeah. And one of those things that they do is have complementary partners.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing that I wanted to note in and add to your rendition of the story is that you noticed this, what was I, like 18, 19, I think, when I started working for teammates, right? So we've known each other over a decade. Mm-hmm. And you noticed the potential and you called it out, which when we talked about what great mentors look like, in the last episode, I think. Is that just the last episode? Mm-hmm. Yeah. We named that, right? Like identifying and calling out potential. And I think there is so much overlap in the Venn diagram of really good mentors and really good leaders. I think good leaders are naturally mentors, right? Really good mentors are naturally leaders. And when I think about like so much of like our friendship, our working relationship was such like a collaboration and a partnership, but it also was a mentorship. Like we don't, like you talk about how much you learned from me, right? Oh my gosh, the amount of things that I've learned from you, right? Like you've equipped me with this language of strengths. You're the one who introduced it to me. You're the one who advocated for me, right? Like you're the one that was like, if anybody is going to go through this training with Gallup, let it be her, right? You're the one who made the space for it. You're the one who did not treat me as a summer intern, right? And advocated that I continue to do this work, right? And then advocated for and empowered me to make space for that in addition to the other things that I was required to do for my job, right? When I came on full time, like all of those things, right? Like made for not just great partnership, but great mentorship within, I think, our working relationship and friendship.
Well, great leaders mentor, and great leaders are mentored when there's reciprocity. And I think I don't know that I ever looked at it in the moment as mentoring because you're brilliant. And I was like, oof, this is a person that's going to help me be better at this. And when I mention that I talk about you in every presentation that I do, I talk about complementary partners and I teach that as part of the workshops that I facilitate. I talk about your data brain. For every data point, I had a story. And for every story that I had with my high communication, you had a data point. And so together, presenting together, we were a powerhouse. Mm-hmm. Because you were rounding off some of my strengths and I was rounding off some of yours. And I speak to that from a lens of if you aren't finding your complementary partners, you're definitely missing out because it's going to enhance who you are and how you show up. Imagine if I wouldn't have had you in those national mentoring conference presentations. You know, I just have been telling stories all day long. And, you know, you came in with, hey, let's have a couple slides that have actual information on them. That might be helpful. And your lens was always very, yes, strategic, but very data driven. And it's in your integrity. You didn't want to get up there and tell a story that didn't have integrous reality aligned with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing that great leaders do is they walk in integrity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good one. And I think I will note, and it's, and I don't know What is it within you that downplays the power of what you bring to a partnership? Because I'm listening to that and I'm like, if I didn't have you presenting, I'd just presenting all these boring ass numbers. Like, I just like, and maybe throw in a story of like, oh yeah, and by the way, here's, you know, Susie, you let know, the, in sixth
let
grade.
Let the record show that you cussed first in this episode.
In this episode.
I have mentored you. You cussed first in this episode. I have arrived as a mentor.
You have arrived. I do. I tend to hold my tongue a little bit more. But I think that's the, when we talk about reciprocity, right? When we talk about even like search institutes, developmental assets, like shared power, right? I think it's like important to acknowledge what you do bring, right? And I think there's that, and I want to challenge this mindset of yours of like, I would have just told stories all day. Stories grip people's imagination much more than data does, right? And so there's like power in both people coming to the partnership, right? And I think that's the language that strengths, but also having really great complementary partners enables us to do, is that we can see ourselves more rightly for the contributions that we have. Like, I think about the fact that like, I know being able to utilize, being able to recall data, being able to analyze it, contextualize it is an important skill, right? But knowing that and seeing the uniqueness of the contribution that that is was only made possible through this framework. Like, I am at times as self-deprecating as you can be about what I bring to the table. I think really knowing yourself, to quote you, right? Self-awareness is incredibly underrated. Mm-hmm. Like, when we know the contributions that we bring, we can see ourselves rightly for what great attributes we bring into a partnership. And so I want to call you out a little bit to practice what you preach here and say those stories matter, right? And there's a reason that people look to us and have talked about us as really good complementary partners, is because we're both aware of the contributions that we bring and acknowledge them for what they are rightly, right? Not mm-hmm. over, not being like overly, you know, on our high horse about the things that we bring, but also not in a way that's like self-deprecating and calls, you know, falls short of what we do bring to the table.
I will agree. And thank you for that. Self-awareness is tremendously underrated. And it's one of the things that great leaders do. They know themselves. They know themselves authentically. Mm-hmm. And I think as a result, great leaders encourage their teams, their followers, to feel comfortable doing the same.
Yeah, yeah.
I also think that there's established trust here, which allows that feedback. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that great leaders do is they provide psychological safety. Mm. And it's not about them. It's about knowing and understanding their team members and knowing, understanding the needs of their team members. You are able to do that with me here and call me out and give me that feedback because we have established trust, but also because there's psychological safety here.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And I think great leaders do that. It takes time.
Yeah, certainly.
And what I've found is that great leaders are willing to invest in that relationship building component.
Yeah. It's something like I always encouraged when I did a lot more coaching than I do now, is seeing, especially with leaders that are really high in executing or high in influencing, like, or even like strategic thinking, right? Like, people that are very like vision oriented, as most leaders are. Like, you don't get to a C-suite position if you don't have drive, if you don't have strategy in mind. Like, you're not getting to that point within a company or an org. And one of the things that I always encouraged leaders to do was literally put your relationships on your to-do list. Like, block out time for that on your calendar, right? Invest in your people, right? Because they are going to return that investment to you. Like, they are going to, you know, it's going to cost you so much more, not only like actually financially, but so much more time to have to train new people if people keep leaving because they don't feel safety and they don't feel like they're being developed and they don't feel like they're given the opportunities to do what they do best. And so putting, like, especially for people who aren't inclined to that or don't see that as valuable as some of the other things, like getting things done and developing strategy, like putting your people on your to-do list, not as like a transaction, but as like a, this is as important as setting strategy. Like, your people will help you accomplish your strategy. So you best be investing in them, right?
Well, and I think that what you just modeled is great leaders have systems. And that's probably been one of the hardest learning pieces for me in this truly, I mean, there's no other way for me to describe it other than exponential growth that I've had with my consulting. I'm working with some of the most phenomenal leaders I've ever known, and leaders that are recognized in their industries, and leaders that have, who are very successful. And I'm noticing that those leaders have great systems. And sometimes the system is putting time on the calendar to build relationships, which may feel very inauthentic or, you know, even cold. But if that's a system that you need to lean into that. Big goal for me this year is to find more systems. If anybody would like to be a part-time assistant, I am taking applications. But that's a system that I need. I need help with booking my flights. I need help with putting invoices together. I need help with setting up rental cars. I need help with the follow-up emails. I need a system in place. Yeah. But also getting more aware of what are simple systems, like having my groceries delivered. Yeah. So that I... Tess, it never occurred to me.
Wait, seriously? No.
Never.
No.
Well, you know I like being in the store.
Oh, yeah, to talk to people.
I want to talk to people and meet people.
It's like my least favorite place.
But I can't come home at, you know, from an 11:30 flight and find that I don't have half and half because, I mean, there's going to be a revolt and there's only one of us who lives here. So, I mean, I got to have it.
Yeah.
And the simple system of, okay, Allison, think about what you need. And then plan for it.
Yeah.
It's a system. There are some things that I'm doing with the way that I track my expenses for expense reports.
Yeah.
That's a system.
Yeah.
I'm getting into the rhythm of that in a way that I hadn't. Yeah. And so can give a lot of shout outs for people who've helped me with systems. But in particular, I mean, just by osmosis, spending a lot of time with JC.
Yeah.
She's got systems.
Yeah.
She's got systems for her systems.
Systems on top of systems.
Mm-hmm. She has systems.
And I will note, I know you said it in like an offhanded way, but I think it circles back to one of your points earlier about leaders being very self-aware, is that you were like, okay, I'm getting too overloaded, right? I can't keep up with everything. I need to hire someone to help with these aspects that I might not be as good at or are lower leveled for me in terms of priorities. And I think a big part of self-awareness is not just knowing what you're good at, but knowing your limitations, things that you aren't as great at, or things that aren't as, things that get shifted to lower priority,
mm-hmm.
right? And that means, and that comes back to this idea of building really great teams, having good complementary partners, that I think the fallacy in leadership today is like be all. For all people, right, is yes. be well-rounded. You have yes. to be the strategist, and you have to be data-driven, and you have to be good with people, and you have to have a good rapport with your board, and you have to be a good public speaker, and you have to be a good fundraiser. Like, the list goes on and on, especially in those, like, upper echelons of leadership within organizations. And I think when we talk about self-awareness, right, it's not just what strengths you bring to the table.
Right.
It's a
right.
very, very real awareness of what things you are not good at, what your shortcomings are. And that doesn't mean to work harder at those shortcomings, right? It means right. to find really good blends, to find partners, and to build really great teams, right, that help offset the areas where you don't have as many strengths, right? And that's like the entire strengths-based philosophy, right?
But of course.
I feel like it just needs to be hammered home.
It does. And when we think about achiever, right? Achiever that is the most common strength that Gallup sees in the 30 million people globally that have taken this. Mm-hmm. Achiever's greatest watch out is burnout.
Yeah.
Because achiever's trying to do all the things. But I want to point back to, I sometimes attribute it to, I mean, I am a small town farm girl who is expected to do it all. Hmm. I worked 20 years in a nonprofit where we just talked about this. I was expected to do four roles. So I read this beautiful piece about billable hours. So if you're an accountant, if you're an attorney, that makes a lot more sense, like billable hours, but that gets you down to the absolute nitty gritty of what you're doing. If you're a civil engineer, you have to bill your client billable hours. So I started thinking about what are my actual billable hours, and then I started thinking about how lovely it would be if I could pay someone for their billable hours and honor their small business and honor the things that they're doing to try to grow what they're good at.
Yeah.
These are the things that have helped me shift thinking that I have to do it all into more of a broader sort of what are my billable hours and how could I support someone else's billable hours?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, that's such a cool shift to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my billable hours are not booking flights, mm-hmm. right? It wears me out. It wears me out worse than the spreadsheets you used to send me. I just want to lay on the floor and cry because I don't want to think about, okay, does this jive with my calendar? I have to have 4 screens open to think through some of the things because I will lose sight of the fact that, okay, I have to go park at you know, short-term parking or long-term parking, depending on what it looks like. Then I started thinking about that system. Mm-hmm. Would it be that crazy for me to Uber?
Wow. Revolution.
Wow is right. And then you know what I wouldn't have to do? Scrape my icy windshield. I mean, just some of these things that are like, my mind is blown because I started to think about systems that would help me be more efficient in my billable hours. Now that came from a place of necessity. Yeah. This is where I'm not a great leader. Great leaders are thinking ahead and they are willing to take risk before they need to. Mm-hmm. So I've asked a lot of great leaders, what would you do differently if you were me? That's Adam Grant's philosophy around feedback, right? What would you do differently? And I've heard a lot of leaders say to me, I'd have hired somebody to help me sooner.
Yeah.
So I'm trying not to wait around that. So systems was another thing that I noted about great leaders, self-awareness, complementary partners. Mm-hmm. You did this quite naturally, but I think great leaders are willing to learn, even if learner is not one of their top 5 strengths, they are willing to learn and they have the capacity to learning new things. They also are willing to ask for help, which I think is part of the learning. Asking for help is one of the most challenging things, I think, for all of us. The other I had on my list here was great leaders practice what they preach. So they are in the walk. They're walking with. Mm-hmm. I like to say with all my clients, I'm not the expert of anything. I'm walking with you, never ahead. But I think great leaders practice what they preach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that goes back to integrity, like I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. In my mind, walking the walk is another way to say integrity.
And I've watched this in you long before it was your word of the year. Long before it was abundantly clear, before you even had the opportunities to step into it and to actually be, I mean, before you had the moments where you really had to say, what are my core values and how do I walk in this situation? And I think that you have really modeled that integrity component in a way that, I mean, most leaders could be learning from.
Hmm. Gosh, thank you.
Yeah, and you've helped me do it too. You've helped me do it too because it has called. It's helped me call things to question.
Yeah.
Is this for the greater good?
Mm-hmm.
Is this for the greater good? Is this and really getting in alignment with the way that I made decisions? Including really hard decisions, mm-hmm. And decisions around whether you go or you stay, and decisions mm-hmm. around whose voice you allow to really be heard in your life.
Yeah.
That's been a really meaningful component to the things that you have helped me learn. I also think on that same note that great leaders do recognition well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And recognition is really tricky. We talk about this a lot here. A lot. I think back to our friend Steph, and I hope that she would love this story, and maybe we've told it here before, but Steph has high responsibility, and one of the things that Steph taught me about that strength is, of course she's going to get the job done. Mm-hmm. So when we would praise her, like, yay, Steph, you got the job done, she was like,
yeah.
Yeah. That's what I do.
Of course, yeah.
It didn't feel like recognition. Mm. It felt like that's the expectation, status quo.
She's meeting the expectation, right? Yeah. It wasn't. It's like saying that you did a great job, so I'm going to give you a 3% raise, right? Which is not even a cost of living raise, but to label it as a meritocratic raise. So it's like recognition is, yeah, where you're going above and beyond what the expectation is.
Yes. Yeah. And recognition needs to be timely. It needs to be specific. We know that. But also I think it should be, we should ask, how would you like to receive?
100%, right? And that's where, like, so when we, knowing that we were going to talk about leadership, knowing we were going to talk a little bit about the history of our work here on the podcast, like, I kept rolling this around in my head. I'm like, is this my own strengths bias, right? Or is this a characteristic of good leadership? And that is customization. That is individualization. That is, because I know not everyone, like, in my mind, the very first thing that came to me was good leaders individualize. And not every leader has high individualization. So here's where I need you to check me a little bit and to say, to what extent, right? Because you can have a good leader and have any strength, right? Any of the top five, any of the Gallup strengths high, right? So I know listening, relating, trying to understand what your people need is important in a leader. But someone can be a leader without having individualization is 34, right? And they could still be technically a leader, right? Not necessarily a good leader, but they could be a good leader and have that. Mm-hmm. And so here's where I need a little bit of, like, let's talk through this, because to what extent is our conceptions of what a good leader is clouded by what we want to see in leadership?
Well, we gift and receive information. We gift and receive everything through the lens of our strengths. So got two really great stories around that. One, the number one rule in our household growing up was ask first. Mm-hmm. Ask first. Guess whose strengths those were based around?
Your
Mine.
Input.
Input communication. Ask first. Yeah. Maximizer, self-assurance activator Lauren never thought about asking for permission. And deliberative analytical Sean was over there thinking about it for days before he'd ask permission. So as a leader, that, by the way, that's the most important role I will ever have. The most important leadership role I will ever have is being their mom. The most important team I've ever been lucky enough to be part of is my kids, my family. So when I think about that, I think about how I was always coming from the lens of my strengths until I learned this and learned their strengths and realized they weren't plotting against me every day and they were actually trying to be their most authentic self. That really helped open my eyes. Hi, George. Let's just
I'm
welcome
so
him
sorry.
In.
We'll just acknowledge he is on something else today. So I apologize, everybody, for all
the
barking and the snorting and the that. Yeah, welcome to the club, G-Man.
Hi, George. Does he feel seen and heard? I think that's what he needs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I jokingly close ears of any children listening. I mean, I call him an attention whore. Like, I mean, he is a stage five clinger. He needs to know that he's the center of attention all the time. And it's very problematic when it comes to things like this. So
back to customization. Why would that be a watch out as a leader? And I'm going to again give credit and recognition where it's due. JC teaches about this all the time because she has high individualization. Mm-hmm. And one of her complementary partners, he has high consistency. And his response to her customization is unique situations create unique problems. Hmm. So if you customize everything for each individual, you may be setting yourself up for treating people unfairly. That could look like favoritism if you are always customizing. Mm-hmm. I mean, JC could do an entire podcast on this, but I think that's one of the great things that I've learned in being around leaders with very different talents is absolutely, I agree with you, but I have high individualization.
Yeah.
So I think you do have to customize. But for leaders who don't, they need a system in place that keeps them in check. Just the same way that for a leader who has high communication, it turns out no one wants 4-page emails. I do.
Shocker.
But no one else does. So I need complementary partners that say, ooh, as a leader, you should probably check the sheer volume of words that you are sending. How much can one person really take in? And I'm like, I can take in 4 pages. Oh my gosh. Love that. So all of you listeners that like just want to like write at night, send it to me. I love it. But what I've learned is clarity is kindness, to quote our friend Brené. Mm. And when I'm given a lot of words, sometimes they're pretty vague.
Mm. Yeah. See, and for me, the more concise, the more direct the communication, the better. Mm-hmm. Because I'll have a hard time sifting through 4 pages of an email to figure out what you want from me. Right.
Right. So I think great leaders have complimentary partners. Check them. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's before you send an email out, you have someone that has strengths different from you. Take a look at that and say, what did you hear? One of the things that I've been doing in all of my sessions now is to ask the clarifying question when I give instructions. Like if I do an activity, I'll give the instructions and then I'll say, okay, someone else in the room, teach that out. What did you hear? Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how, I mean, you know this, and so do the listeners. My field of communication is like this roundabout, up and around, weaving through. We're about to get on a river and nobody really knows where we're going, and I don't either half the time. That's how my communication comes across.
Yeah.
I want to correct myself. I heard someone do that the other day and I almost like came out of my skin. Across. That's how my communication comes across.
Yeah. Well, we listened forever ago to that TED Talk, right? That was the upside down versus the pointy side up triangle, right? And you are definitely, because of your storytelling gift, a communicator that has an upside down triangle where you weave to conclude with your punchline, with your statement, with the things that are most impactful. And I think there's a lot of contexts in which that is very valid and much more powerful form, a much more powerful form of communication, right? Let's start with the point up front and then provide all the supporting right. evidence, like with the point of the triangle up top. And I think in a lot of ways, the directness, the clarity, like in many professional settings, right, that might be a greater and more powerful form of communication. Not all of them, right? But I feel like in many ways in business, I think just because of the pure inundation of information we constantly have in the workplace, starting with what we need up front, I think is a good form of kindness. Yeah.
Well, and if you think about our constituents, our followers, that's Gallup's terminology, right? Hope, stability, trust, compassion. What do your followers need? Mm-hmm. Dials down to those 4 words. You know, thinking about followers, our followers have that 1 in 33 million lens as well. And so the way that they receive information is going to be very different. I was thinking about this the other day because being part of, you know, been part of a team, part of the band my whole life, and now I'm a solo artist. And so I don't have that immediate sort of feedback. I read the room when I'm facilitating and I get to be part of other teams, but I don't really have the collaboration piece where I remember us sitting across from each other that I could just say out loud, I'm going to type this.
Yeah.
And I'd read it to you. Yeah. And you could help me clarify, like, you didn't get it. Or, wow, that's a lot of words for actually what 2 bullet points could mean.
Yep. Bullet points. In my mind, I'm like, if you're not using bullet points in an email, if you have paragraphs, then... Yeah.
Then that's a blog.
That's not an email. That's a meeting at that point.
That's a meeting. And meetings that don't have an agenda or a purpose or action steps are gatherings. Mm-hmm. They're social gatherings. And I'm learning a lot about that when it comes to systems. Yeah. How are you? Great leaders do necessary meetings, and they make sure that there is an expectation going in what the meeting is about, and there are action steps after.
Yep.
And I love witnessing that. That's really powerful. Mm. I think especially in a post-pandemic workspace.
Yeah.
It's critical.
So many meetings are virtual. Yeah. Like,
The other item that I had on my list was, great leaders do culture well, and culture has become a very popular term as of late, but, along with being an engagement nerd, I am now a culture nerd. and I pay close attention to the organizations that do it well. And what I'm finding is there is a direct tie to how they onboard. And immediately in onboarding, if mission, vision, values is being exemplified, it will most likely tie to a well-established culture.
So what does that look like? Tell me more. What does it look
like? So when I work with the team, so when I work with a team, I'll say, and the leaders in the room, right? Let's say, for example, I'm going to be up the street at Neater's, right? Neater's Coffee Bakery. If I was working with the Neater's team, I would say, okay, this is the, I'm in the Lone Tree area, so this is the KL group. Teach me the KL way. I know Neater's is an overarching chain, right? But so I understand what Neater's is about, but I want you to help me understand in this store, in this container, in this group of leaders, what's the KL way? And the leader in the room can't speak. So I'll say to the rest of the group, teach me, what are the words and phrases that describe culture here? And they'll list those out. And the leader, in most situations, I've been very lucky to work with highly engaged teams and great leaders. For the most part, the leader in the room is like, oh my goodness, we are creating sticking points with culture. Sometimes what I'll find is the leader will look at me blankly like, that's not what we say about culture here. And so when I see alignment, then I'll say to the team members, tell me about your first few days, weeks here. How did these culture points, how were they emulated? And what I'm loving now is I'm getting the opportunity to sit in on trainings. Training audit is becoming one of the services that I provide. I'm loving that too, because yours in training. And I'm asking new team members, what are you're new to this organization. What are some words and phrases that you're picking up on? And if those words and phrases align with company culture, especially if they're a seasoned existing company, they're making those things are sticking. Those messages, those mission, vision, value points are sticking. And your team members, highly engaged, more likely to be able to mentor and to demonstrate those to others. So it's not just on the leader or not just on the trainer or not just on HR. Yeah. It's on the entire team.
Yeah, that's good.
So think back to onboarding for you, and you can pick any organization that you've been part of or any learning opportunity that you've been part of. What was that like? You don't have to name the organization, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to like think about one because, of course, my most recent one, I was not, I mean, I went to new student orientation, graduate school orientation, I guess, which is a form of onboarding. Yes, it's definitely a, this is who we're about, this is the expectation. So yeah, in many ways, a form of onboarding. Yeah, what was that like? What was the culture? Information dumping. But in many ways, I felt like I had a lot of resources to succeed. There was a lot of, and this agency is here for you, and this department is here for you, and we have these additional offerings. Here's who, you know, you go to if you need assistance. So I feel like I was, it made me feel supported to be successful. And I would say that's, yeah.
It's been a few resources years now to be successful. Resources to succeed. Yeah. It's huge.
Yeah.
So when you think about what great leaders do or great teams do that exemplify leadership, what comes to mind for you?
I mean, so much of what you said. I mean, I knew that your input communication would have a nice list that I could then continue to add to.
I have a list. So,
I mean, and here's where I think not that I overthought it, but I think I've been just sitting with this quandary, right, of like not wanting to put definitive characteristics on good leadership because, and that's my individualization as a roadblock, right, that says anybody has the potential to be a good leader with any set of strengths and any characteristic in any industry, right? Anyone has the potential to do that. And I think it's, in the end, the only thing that I think it comes down to is being aware of what strengths you bring to the table and building out good teams to compensate. Because in the end, you can have a totally different strength set that I might say, right, like makes a good leader. But as long as you fill your other leaders, your co-conspirators, your other team members, right, with people who exemplify those other strengths that are needed within good leadership, mm-hmm. then you are a good leader, right? Yep. So if you are high deliberative, high command, like maybe some of these strengths that I might not immediately think of in really good leaders that I've had specifically, you can be an incredible leader. Like have some great woo on your team, like have some high individualization, like build up a team that compensates for the areas that you might not be naturally proficient in as a leader. So in the end, I think it's one thing. It's being aware of who you are and the strengths you bring to the table, and then having the ability to build out a really great team in the areas that you don't have as many strengths.
Beautifully said. I mean, it's the creation of a robust support system.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's also...
No leader can be all things. And in some ways, leadership requires you to be all things. But an individual leader cannot be all of those things, right? Because if we were to each go to like 10 people in our lives and ask what makes a good leader, like they're all going to come out with something different, right? But they're all going to expect that of their leaders, right? Because that's what good leadership looks like to them. And so leadership as a construct, as a framework, as an idea of what we have in society requires you to be everything. But an individual mm-hmm. leader cannot be everything. So to make it good, to make it great, to be a good leader and to have good leadership requires knowing who you are and building really great teams to compensate for where you don't have strength.
I love what you mentioned about expectations, because I think that's a watch out I see in a lot of the, I work with a number of clients as a coach, and it's expectations are really tricky because we tend to not be clear with them. And we also struggle to gain clarity around them. So what does paint it done? Again, I'm quoting Brené extra today. Paint it done. What is the expectation of this project? What is the timeline? What is the leader's expectation on the team? What does culture look like? And what's the expectation for those individuals to carry that forward? What's the expectation around being a mentor? What's the expectation around work-life balance, you know, really getting clear. But I think that great leaders ask great questions and are willing to have conversations where they can also be asked great questions to really get to that point of clarity.
Yeah.
All the teams I work with all over the place, I have yet to have anybody say, hey, you know what we do really well around here? We communicate.
Yeah.
No one has said that to me. They're all struggling with it. And 99% of the time, it's because what they heard was not what the individual thought they said.
Yep.
So again, this is why having somebody take a look at your email and say, what are the two big messages you get out of this?
Yep.
Or when you give instruction or you're working on a project or you've got a goal in mind, asking someone else, what did you just hear me say?
Yeah.
It just clarifies. And granted, that's my input communication, mm-hmm. just wanting clarity. But I'm also learning through meaningful relationships that I am often vague about my expectations, and then I get resentful when people don't meet them. So fascinating.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
One of the systems I'm really learning is to ask for help. So when I get home and I have luggage to haul up 3 flights of stairs, could I have asked someone to help me with that?
Yeah.
Or could I be resentful about the fact that I had to lug it up myself?
Hmm.
I got to be willing to be clear about what I need, ask for help, but then also be open to the fact that, you know, not everybody can be here at 11 p.m. to help me load those things up. But if I give them a heads up that I'm going to be, I don't know, driving back from Nebraska with 2 loads of things in my car, yes, they would be.
Yeah.
And so it's a really powerful thing, I think, for us to think about. We're all leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And how are we communicating those components, like what we need, what our expectations are? This is a pretty good list, Tess.
Mm-hmm.
And I think would be a great question of our listeners. what would be things that they would add to this list, or maybe they'd just ditch our list altogether.
Yeah. What would you remove, edit, or add to our list of what good leadership looks like?
It's a great question.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with that, we want to thank everybody for tuning in to episode 116 of Jen and Millie. If you enjoyed today's conversation, consider sharing this episode with a friend. To interact with us and share your responses to the question that we posed, best way to do so is by giving us a follow on Instagram at Jen and Millie. That's at GENNANDMILLIE. Until next time.